Missionary Alliance, and we are delighted to get to host you this morning. I know that you are here this morning because you are aware that Dr. Stumbo is going to be preaching, and we are delighted to have you here because we're just as excited as you are to get the opportunity to hear from the Lord this morning through Dr. Stumbo. And so just wanted to extend a welcome to all of you that are here from out of the country. This morning is, of course, our celebration of Memorial Day weekend. Memorial Day tomorrow. Many of you have the day off. I know there are lots of barbecues planned and lots of festivities planned over the course of this weekend, but I do not want this weekend to pass us by without a memory of Tommy McPherson, Sergeant Tommy McPherson's death in 2012. He was a fine young man, but more than that, a real true American hero, a hero to us from this church because he grew up in our hallways and he went through our children's and youth ministries and went on to serve this country. And we are deeply proud of men like Tommy who have given their lives as he did with the Rangers in serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. We are deeply proud of them. We remember those who have given everything. And Tommy, for us, is the face of that, but also all that Claudia, his wife, and Braden, his son, gave in allowing their father to defend this country from those that would do us harm. And so on this Memorial Day weekend, Tommy gets to be the face of really what we remember. And what we remember is thousands upon tens of thousands of men and women who have given their lives for this country so that we can do what we're doing this morning, which is to have the opportunity to worship God in a free place and in a free manner. I just thank those men and women. And if you are part of the McPherson family, if you are connected to the McPherson family, please be sure to give Dee Dee a hug. Please be sure to give Claudia and Braden a squeeze and tell them how much you are appreciative of Tommy's sacrifice and all who are like him. I also want to welcome some key people. I got to admit, we are a church family here, and we are about as unimpressed by titles as a group of people could be. We could care less, really, right? I'm a pastor. Doesn't matter to me. Just my identity. I don't walk around and go, hello, Plumber Joe, any more than I expect you to say, hello, Pastor Chris, or that kind of thing. We all have got names, and we really kind of operate by those identities. We are a church family. Jesus is our pastor, but we've got some people here that I believe I would like you to connect with. First and foremost, in about a week from right now, a week and a day, I believe, from right now, we are going to be having a new member of our staff join us, and his name is Jesse Duckett, and his wife's name is Liz Duckett, and they are sitting right back there, and we are so excited that you guys are here, that you are finally here from Multnomah. Jesse's graduation was just a couple of weeks ago. They have transplanted, driven down from Oregon to Southern California. They are immersed in the insanity of this culture. And while they enjoy the fact that the sun actually shines outside, they also are a little overwhelmed both at their sudden moving from the college and master's degree culture and the unique unity they had with the group of people that they were walking through school with and that loss that has occurred there, but also with just getting to know 300 plus people and not knowing any of their names. And you all know their names and that kind of thing. So please hug them, love them, and keep repeating your name to them for like years to come. And you that work with our children's ministry, Ryan, Josh, and James, you don't know them yet, but if you hear an explosion, that's them. And they're over there with the rest of our kids just having a blast over in our children's ministry. And so when you love on the Ducats, it'll mean a lot for you to know and to love on their kids and to welcome them as part of this family. Robin Doomer, are you here? If you are here, could you raise your hand? Robin Doomer, hello. And Debbie, are you here? Yes, stand up, you too. You too. You're not alone there. This is Robin and Debbie. Robin has just been appointed as the president of Simpson University. Congratulations. Robin, here's the deal, though. I'm telling you, it doesn't matter. Pardon me. Dr. Doomer. It doesn't matter, though. The doctorates, those titles, they don't matter. You know what? I've sat with Robin, oh my word, in my office. I've sat with Robin in my office, and he shares a heart for the gospel and for seeing young men and women trained in the gospel and to make a difference for the sake of the kingdom, that all things will be put under Christ. That's what matters about that couple. That's what matters about that man. And I just would, they're not here every Sunday, but they are part of our family. And so I want you to welcome Robin and Debbie. It's a delight to have you with us. It's good to have you in town for council. It's wonderful to get to share and worship together on this morning. Benoit and Marcy, could you guys stand up? These are our French missionaries that are here this week. For those of you that got to be a part, you guys can sit back down. Thank you so much. For those of you that got to be a part of the festivities that we had on Friday night, we had over 100 people over in the gym having a dinner, the long table. Kelly Douglas, fantastic, fabulous job. Just had a great time over there. We got to know, I'm going to butcher, you know, in English I'd say it as Foucault, and I would just hammer it and that kind of thing. And so I'm just going to, it's like Foucault, you know, it's like got that French thing going on. And so we got to hear about what they're doing in ministry and how dedicated they are to penetrating a very dark area that has an influx of Muslims from Northern Africa up into France, and how they're going to start a tea house there and a coffee house there that is going to be able to penetrate into that culture in a way that makes sense to those Muslims. And through those relationships, yeah, that's a good reminder right there. Everybody, check your cell phones, all right? That's just good, all right. How they're going to use that place to begin to develop relationship for the sake of the gospel. And we are delighted to partner with you in ministry, and we are delighted to have you with us. And son Mark, I didn't want to forget you, Mark. Mark, going into junior year of high school or senior year? Senior year? Going into senior year of high school. And so be sure to say hello to Benoit, Marcy, and Mark. Finally, Dr. John and Joanna Stumbo. They're there, right there. Hello, good morning. Now I'm going to read a little bit because Anyway, he's the president of the Christian Missionary Alliance, which is the denom that we belong to, which I know, again, means nothing, right? They're a partner for the sake of the gospel. We are dedicated to seeing every last person on this planet know, understand, and experience the gospel of Jesus Christ. Dr. Stumbo became president in 2013. He's going to have a book table in the back. He doesn't get any money from those books, all right? He's providing those. I'll explain it to you a little bit later, but I want you to know he didn't come to hawk his goods. He came to share a story that I believe will be life-changing for us this morning, because it's got Jesus wrapped up in the middle of it and him, and what a, I'm not, that's enough. Okay, it's just going to be a wonderful morning to hear from him. John and Joanna have three children and a grandson. Very exciting. Yes, it's that stage, isn't it? How fun. You'll get to hear from Dr. Stumbo this morning. Again, I commend him to you. I have had the opportunity to hear a bit of what we will hear this morning. And I commend him to you because his life was purchased by Christ, and we share in that together, and he is passionate about what we are passionate about, which is seeing the gospel go from this lighthouse out into a dark and dying world. That is who we are. That is what we are about. And this morning, when we have this greeting time right now, this is an opportunity for us to connect with each other in a very brief way, to just love on one another. So I want you to stand up, say hello to those that are around you, especially those that you have not yet met. Go ahead and stand up and greet one another.
Well, good morning, church. It's great to be in Long Beach with you today. I'm excited that the whole Alliance family is invading your territory. We're not going to do this for another decade, I promise you, to have a national conference this close to you. So this is the week to wander over to the convention center. You'll want to come early, not only to get a good seat, but also because we've got stuff pre-service, 15 minutes before each service, like Thursday night interviewing Ben and Marcy and some others, and videos and stuff each night. Sunday morning, same thing, come early, and we'll have some pre-service. Our Syrian brothers, Edward and Riyad, are going to be a part of the presentation on Sunday morning. Did you know this? You have 18 sister churches inside Syria worshiping Jesus today. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. But that's next Sunday's story. Today, here in the States, you're worshiping with 2,000 other sister churches that are part of this Alliance family in 37 languages. Here in the States, 37 languages. As part of this Alliance family. Around the world is 20,000 churches and a couple hundred languages. But that's the family you're part of. And I, as president, I want to stand here just for a moment and thank you that you are part of that family. You're a contributing part of that family through prayer, through sending out, raising up and sending out another worker to join the team, and through your finances, just faithfully, year after year, supporting the Great Commission Fund. So I got to just say thank you. Your investments are making a difference across the globe, and I get to see the fruit of that. And this week you'll come and hear some of the fruit of that. But this morning, Pastor Chris has invited me to share my story with you. And I want to ground my story in Psalm 74. If you take your Bibles, and after seeing Pastor Chris's library, I pretty much assumed there'd be a couple Bibles in this church today. That makes me feel good when I hear pages turning. Psalm 74. You know they sang these things, right? Imagine if Pastor Scott stood up one day and said, "Everybody stand, please, for our call to worship," and these are the opening lyrics. "Why have you rejected us forever? Oh, God." Oh, there's a way to start a worship service, isn't it? Well, actually, it's a good way to start a worship service if it's honest, because the best worship comes from honest hearts. We don't have time to walk through every verse here, but let me quickly tell you what's going on in Psalm 74 to give you the context. Something holy is under attack. In this particular story, it was the temple in Jerusalem. Solomon's beautiful temple had been attacked by a band of marauders with axes and hatchets and torches, and they had come into the holiest of places and completely desecrated it. The temple was now a pile of ruins. And a songwriter, as they often do, helped us put words to our torn up emotions. So that's what Psalm 74 is. By the way, praise God, we don't have anything holy under attack in our nation like a building, although they did lose one of the church buildings in Syria, immediately rebuilt it. But here in the States, right here in Long Beach, would you not agree that holy things are still under attack? Marriages, families, relationships, human bodies, emotions, our souls. Something holy is still under attack. That's what this psalm is about. You get down to verse 9, it says, we are given no miraculous signs, no prophets are left, and none of us knows how long this will be. Have you ever had the where are you, God, prayers? And when we're in a hard time, it's almost universal that we ask two questions. When something gets upside down in our lives, we ask two questions. Can you tell me what those questions are? First question is, why? Yeah, why? And the second question is, how long? How long is this going to last? Can I get out of this? Like, now. I mean, California, the home of In-N-Out Burger. We want it now, you know. One of the best things in California. Anyway. Verse 10. How long will the enemy mock you, O God? Why, verse 11, why do you hold back your hand? There's the two questions. How long, why? Verse 11, why do you hold back your hand, your right hand? Take it from the fold of your garment. God, would you get your hands out of your pockets, please? Have you ever prayed that kind of prayer? Then you should try it sometime. I heard the sarcasm in your voice. Sometimes we read the Bible too fast, and we miss a huge transition, particularly in the Psalms, where there has been a tone, there has been a key that is being played, but suddenly there's a key change. Well, we don't get to hear the music, but if you read the lyrics closely enough, you find out, time out. Something just shifted. And this psalmist, this poet, who has been lamenting the horrible thing that has taken place in his world, has suddenly does a but this much I know kind of moment, as the psalms often do. There is this key-changing, but you, O Lord, look at verse 12, but you, O Lord, are my king from of old. I can't find you. I can't see you. I don't know what you're doing. I don't like what's going on, but this much I know. I have a God. This is the four-wheel drive off-road kind of faith. You're driving along, cruise control, everything's fine, and all of a sudden your faith isn't working like it once was because your environment has completely changed and you need a Jeep four-wheel drive at this moment kind of faith where you dig in to a lower gear and say, but this much I know, I have. Have you been to a high school or college graduation ceremony in the last 20 years? My guess is we all heard the same speech. I can give it to you in 20 seconds, see if you recognize it. Students, you have an unlimited reservoir of human potential within you. To accomplish any dream, to overcome any obstacle, all you must do is believe in yourself. Dig deeply within yourself, and you can accomplish anything in this world. Go, students. You recognize that speech? Okay, I think it probably came from California originally, but because the rest of the nation just imitates, right? Right. So, well, how's that working for you? Maybe at age 18 or in your 20s when you graduate from college, you think you have some unlimited reservoir of human potential. But sometime in your 30s, you're going to wake up tired. Right, Pastor? And you're going to look... And you're going to think, bummer. If all I have is what I find in here, I'm in trouble. And I want to announce to America, yes, officially you are in trouble in this life and the life to come if all you have is what you find in yourself. But those of us who have become followers of Jesus Christ have a completely different message, do we not? I am not on my own in this world. I'm not left to just figure it out for myself. It's not up to me to just dig deeper, try harder, to accomplish some dream, to overcome obstacles, to face death. It's not just, no. I have a shepherd. I have a Lord. I've entrusted the leadership of my life to someone else. I am a happy follower of Jesus. Amen? What a better message. That's what this psalmist is doing right here. I've got a God. I'm not alone. But you, O God, are my king from of old. He goes on with some poetic references to their history about God delivering them from Egypt. But let me drop down to verse 15. Referring to his God, it was you who opened up springs and streams. What's that about? Well, this is the God of abundance, where there's water. This is a little awkward right now in California. Where there's water, there's like almonds and pecans and walnuts and all that, right? And when there's no water, there's no harvest. This is the God of abundance being referred to here. And we like that in America, right? The God of prosperity, the God of abundance. And this verse is clear that he is the God who provides. Look what comes next. You opened up springs and streams. You dried up the ever-flowing rivers. Really? The year-round rivers, the ones that always flow, the Mississippis and Sacramentos, those you dry up. Well, what's that talking about? It's talking about severe drought. Well, which is it? Are you the God of abundance or the God of drought? This verse says both. In case we don't get it, verse 16, the day is yours and also the night. You establish the sun and moon. It was you who set all the boundaries of the earth. You made both summer and winter. Do you hear it? This psalmist is saying, in the midst of a very difficult time, my God isn't only the God of the good times. My God is big enough for the worst days as well. He's the God of abundance and drought, day and night, summer and winter, sun and moon. My God is the God of all, not just the God of ease. Well, that's a pretty big message, especially when suddenly your life gets thrown into a whole different path than you ever expected, and you turn around one day and say, how did I even end up here? So pastor has invited me to tell you my story, so I'm honored to do so. Joanne and I were living in Salem, Oregon, pastoring one of your sister churches. I was a Alliance pastor, and we loved raising our three kids, Anna, Andrew, and Josiah, just delightful children that God gave to us. It was my daughter Anna's fault for getting me involved in this thing called long distance running. I always teased runners. Little shorts, colorful shoes, no ball. Why would you run without a ball? Give me a ball, I'll run. Get no ball, no run. That's the rule. Well, there were great parks and trails in Oregon, and so we started running together, and so I became an ultra marathon runner. Those are races for guys too stupid to stop at 26 miles. We just keep going 50K, 60K up and down the mountains of Oregon. I loved it. Speaking of mountains, not my best day on Mount Hood. Fishing has always been a great love, and this was a pretty good day in the Columbia River. I show you those pictures not to do a Facebook page, but to simply establish a fact that in 2008, as a 47-year-old guy, I was healthy. Never had spent a day in the hospital, never had reason to be concerned. My mother just turned 96. You don't mess with Melba Thora. I mean, she's tough, you know. So I had good genes, I had no issues, so no reason to be concerned. Notice that I had a little rash on my body and blamed my wife. Sorry, hon. Thought she changed the laundry detergent. She hadn't. I didn't think anything of it. But before the week was over, I was too physically weak to drive a car. Something was attacking my muscular system, primarily on the front half of the body, head to toe. Something was impacting me. Started to do some examinations kind of things. But very soon, I would be hospitalized. And I went into the hospital weighing 190 pounds. That was my running weight, but I elevated about 260 as my body wasn't retaining any fluids, and they had to keep me supported in a variety of ways. Five times my wife was brought into the room because I wasn't responding. My whole system was shutting down. I had gone septic. They had no reason. They had no understanding. They didn't know why. And they were throwing every test and every drug to try to reverse or figure out and all that kind of thing. 77 days in the hospital. They did 2 muscle biopsies, numerous skin biopsies, blood draws, spinal tap. They scans and more scans and x-rays. They did every test. They sent my blood and body parts all over the United States trying to figure out what's wrong with me. But you know what? It's a sweet thing to be on your deathbed and for death to be the least of your worries. I kept playing through scenarios. Well, if this happens, I'll die. But if I die, I'll be with Jesus. But if this happens, I'll die. But if I die, I'll be with Jesus. No matter what bad scenario I could come up with, I always ended up with Jesus. Now, how good is that? The New Testament says that Jesus died to free those who all their lives are held in slavery by their fear of death. As long as you're still afraid to die, you're really not free to live. But when you really come to know that Christ is the risen Savior, risen for you, death is no longer an issue, and so life can be fully lived. Dismissed after 77 days without diagnosis, they said to me, well, you stumped us all. We'll have to call it the Stumbo syndrome. Never wanted a disease named after me, but oh well. At this point in the story, some people get pretty irritated. Well, you should have come to a California hospital. We could have figured it out down here, you know. But or what's wrong with those doctors? Well, time out. Doctors have limited human information to try to solve things from a human vantage point, and they work really hard at it. And if you don't know Jesus as your Savior and you have a physical issue, then the doctors are your best and last resort. And so you better get out of them absolutely everything that they humanly can give to you. But if you happen to be a follower of Jesus and believe that he is the resurrected Lord whose life comes to your mortal bodies, then the doctors are a tool that God can use in your recovery. Certainly, we're not against medical assistance by any means. I spent 77 days with my new friends, obviously. But they're not my last and best and final anything. Jesus is my healer. The doctors are the help. As one doctor said to me, God heals, I collect the cash. At least he was honest about it. I was dismissed from the hospital into the care of my wife, who took her wedding vows seriously, having no idea what she was saying when she stood on an alliance platform and saying, in sickness and in health, for better or for worse. She took those vows seriously. Can I say to anyone in the room who has given up hours or days or decades of your life to be a caregiver, providing somebody else a quality of life they would not have otherwise had on their own? Blessed are the caregivers, for in you we have seen the Christ. Thank you for giving us an opportunity to have a piece of life that we would have not otherwise had. My wife had to care for me in every room in the house in every manner possible because I was dismissed from the hospital. I told you I went in 190, ballooned to 260. I came out at 140. I lost 50 pounds of muscle mass and had profound muscle weakness. To lift the sheets was like lifting a refrigerator. To take off a chapstick lid was something that only Hercules could do, it seemed. My wife stood by me. 140 pounds released into the wheelchair and into physical therapy. Blessed are the therapists, for they have made us do things that we didn't think we could do. I was given a 1 pound, you heard me, a 1 pound. It looked like a dog biscuit, a 1 pound dumbbell. I used to bench 225 with my son. Now I got this dog biscuit. It was a workout, believe me. But I need to say this. I know who this is for, but I need to say this. You have a part in your own healing journey. Some of us want to throw all responsibility for our healing onto someone else, or all responsibility for our healing onto God. And others are of great value. God uses them. And God does some miraculous, amazing things. But you have a part in your own healing journey. I don't know what that is. Sometimes it's forgiveness is what it is. Letting go of bitterness. It would be wrong for God to heal you physically if you're still hanging on to bitterness. I'm not saying that's why God, that's why you're sick. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that you have some part, some piece in your healing journey. Well, one of the pieces for me was physical therapy. I would not be standing before you today were it not for that. And I was released in the hospital without the ability to eat. I didn't know that section of society existed, but I had lost the ability to swallow. The swallow is one of these amazing designs of a master creator where there's dozens of nerves and muscles and a hyoid bone that have to work in perfect synchronization for you to get the saliva that's in your mouth right now that you suddenly become awkwardly aware of. That saliva that's in your mouth right now, for you to get that out of your mouth, for the epiglottis to come down, for the esophagus to open, for all that process to take place is the design of a master artist, but mine had completely ceased to function. I had no ability to swallow, so they had to punch a hole into my stomach, and I lived on 7 cans a day of 2 words which should never be put together. Medical food. Which is it? Is it medicine or is it food? Don't tell me it's both. I don't believe it. But 7, this was breakfast. This was lunch. This was dinner. This was my drinks. This was my medication. Because if it didn't go in here, it had no way of getting into the body. You see, next to me, there's paper towel. That's because when I say I couldn't swallow, I mean I couldn't swallow. That includes the saliva. So how did your pastor die? Oh, he drowned in his own spit. That's real happy, you know. So I had to live with spit rags, spit towels, spit cups, anything to be able to get rid of this stuff. And I hated it. It was embarrassing. It was miserable. It was obnoxious. Couldn't sleep at night very well because your body continues to generate saliva at night. My wife would rip off 15 pieces of paper towel, put it by my pillow each night so I'd have something to sleep, spit in. That was 2009. The entire year, 2009. Not a single bite of food, not a single drop of water. At first, you know, the doctors thought they'd be of help. The ear, nose, throat guy was fantastic. I really liked that doctor. He has this nifty little hose with a camera and a light on the end of it that he's happy to run up your nose if you let him. With all, you know, within full view of a TV monitor so you can see the whole thing. Yay. So he brings his hose toward me. I flinched a little bit, and he said, I do this to 5-year-olds. It'll be fine. That's doctor speak for man up, buddy. So he runs a hose up the nose, gives me a guided tour of places I never wanted to see. And he's commenting as he goes, he gets to the back of the throat and he groaned. And he said, oh, you don't have cancer and you don't have injury. That's bad news. I could fix those things. What you have is inoperable in both senses of the word. There's no operation that can fix it, and it's completely non-operating, which was obvious because as I saw the screen, it was clear that my esophagus looked like a belly button. It just sat there closed, tight, no movement, no firing, no method for anything going down, and it just sat closed, still, tight. 4 times they ran those kind of tests to verify what I already knew to be true, that my swallow was non-functioning. My spirit, every day I would still open the scripture. But in 2009, as the months wore on, this started to feel like sandpaper to my soul. Irritating, abrasive. Miracles, promises, I wasn't seeing any of it. I started to wrestle with the God, where are you kinds of questions. I hated his answer one day. I felt like he said, look out your window. I didn't want to look out my window. I knew who was outside my window. Jack was outside my window. You know Jack. He's never been to your church, but you know Jack. The Mr. Nice Guy, do anything for anybody at any time, but don't want any credit for it and kind of stay behind the scenes, Jack. You know what I'm talking about? He was outside mowing my yard. I was angry about it because I like grass. I'm from Colorado. I like grass. No, never mind. he was out mowing my yard. I was angry about it. I wanted to be able to do that. I miss doing that. I like working outside. I was sick of sitting inside in my wheelchair condition, my feeding tube condition. And what God was saying to me is, this is one of my expressions of love to you. I've sent Jack because I love you. Jack's a physical evidence of my love for you, that he's out there taking care of your yard. I was too proud to receive. I had always been on the giving end. I was a pastor. I was the giver. I wasn't wanting to be on the receiving end. That's what, if you're going to understand my love, you need to learn to receive. The months wore on, and I had to resign from the church. I didn't feel that I could keep them waiting for me. But they invited me to come back to try to give a brief message. Now, I practiced speech therapy over and over, how to say some exceedingly difficult words, like Bible, beetle, battle, stumbo, my own name. These words that require so much muscle movement in the tongue and lips and cheeks, practice and practice. And you'll hear that I didn't achieve too high of a level of attainment. But I have a 2.5-minute video clip I'm going to show at this moment from 2009. I show it so partially so you can see the condition, but largely so that you can hear one man's wrestling of where is God in the midst of a crisis, having no idea where it would ever lead, having no idea if I would ever eat another bite of food or drink another drop of water. I'm only 8 months into the story by this video, but watch this. This is from 2009 in Salem, Oregon.
You can hide those feeding tubes pretty good, can't you? I was standing at a walker at the moment. It strikes me that some of us might be in 2009 right now. You've hit a crisis, and you have no idea where it leads. You don't know where this story is going. And one problem that occurs in these times is inside our heads, where we develop these images or pictures or thoughts that start sounding more true than they really are. For me, I had a friend that would call me up a couple times, and he said, "John, you were run over by a truck. You were just going along doing your thing, and wham, you were nailed." Now, he was trying to encourage me, and I appreciated the fact that he understood that this is a very sudden and significant thing. But after a while, what happened in my mind is I began to see myself as run over by a truck, i.e., roadkill. You have that here, right? Or the other picture that I had in my head was of being in God's scratch and dent section. You know, if you want a nice refrigerator out here in the front of the showroom, oh, you only have $85? I'm sorry. Well, we've got one in the back. It doesn't have a door on it, but I was now in God's scratch and dent section. God, I need a different picture. I need a different metaphor. I need to understand this differently. God, help me. He didn't answer that prayer in hours or days or weeks. It was a long time, it seemed like to me. But one day, months after that video, picture came to me very quickly. It was this. Hands were working a clay pot that was going around on a wheel. Work of an artist. The pot looked like a fine pot to me. I didn't see anything wrong with the pot. All of a sudden, those hands took that clay and went right back down to the base. He didn't pick up the clay and throw it away. No, the wheel was still spinning. The hands were still damp. The clay was still on the wheel, but that artist was redoing that work of art. It all happened in a second in my mind. Slowly it dawned on me. God, is that my story? Are you doing a do-over in my life? Yes. But I like the old pot. I like the running, speaking, eating John. I don't like the sitting, spitting, silent John. But God, if your hands are still in my life, I'm in. I couldn't eat a bite of food, drink a drop of water, couldn't get a job. I was still dependent upon my wife. I was still trying to figure it out with the doctors. But suddenly I had a different understanding. I wasn't in a scratch and dent section. I wasn't a dead raccoon. I was in the hands of the Almighty God, who's an artist, a designer, a craftsman. Oh, that changes the storyline, doesn't it? Some of you are praying for a solution, a healing, some resolve. Some of you are praying for a solution right now. I'm not discouraging you from continuing to pray. Keep praying. But would you add to your prayers? Would you broaden your prayers? God, I want to hear from you. I want your perspective. But maybe even before you do the thing I want you to do, maybe I need to hear from you in a deeper way, see you more clearly, understand something about you. Would you ask for a word from God? I believe he does that. Well, I need to hasten. 2009 finished about the way it had started. I had, thankfully, those of you who've donated plasma to make a few bucks to get through college, I received a spinoff of that, some subset of that, and through that, some of my muscles were getting rebuilt, and I was able to move from the wheelchair to a walker to a cane, and I was able to move from the passenger seat back to the driver's seat. Whew! That was big. A whole year of my wife driving me around. We believe in sanctification in the Christian Missionary Alliance, but this was pushing it. I mean, when for both of us. I mean, really, I'm a worse passenger than she is a driver. So it's just bad either way. But love you, hon. Here we are in our Dodge Green Caravan, window rolled down. Passenger seat one sunny day in Oregon, and a big red pickup pulls up next to us. Boom, 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 boom. You know what kind of pickup I'm talking about. Testosterone pouring out of the tailpipe. Boom, 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 boom. Some So Oakland Raiders bumper sticker on it, you know. So this big guy looks down at me and says, "Dude, you're in the wrong seat, man. Get over there where you belong." He's like, "Oh, you're killing me, you redneck." You know. After a year, okay, after a year, I was able to drive again, and our son Josiah was graduating from a sister school, the Simpson, and was graduating from Crown College in Minnesota, and so we decided to go on a road trip, and so make a real road trip out of it, we decided to drive from Oregon to Minnesota by way of Tennessee and visit some friends along the way, thank some people, packed, was it seven or nine cases, nine cases of that medical food in the car. We're 18 months into the story now. I'm still 140 pounds. I haven't gained a single pound on that stuff. But we've got that in the car. I am starting to experiment with other of my own formulas, trying to see if I can. But anyway, that's another story. that's what the book is for. The book is so that you can hear the whole thing. But anyway, so we're on this road trip, and we're having breakfast one day, right? And by now, I am delighted to say, 18 months in the story, this had once again become alive and fresh, and I was hearing from the Lord again. And I was in Psalm 108, and the particular version that I was using at that time said, "The help of man is worthless." I laughed when I read that. Why? Because the doctors had totally given up on the swallow. Five swallow therapists had passed me off, not knowing what to do. They had given up on all manner of me ever eating again. The help of man is worthless. We will act valiantly. There it is again. I've got my own part in this healing journey. But victory comes from the Lord. The last verses of Psalm 108. Victory comes from the Lord. There's some things that only he can do. So I'm meditating on that, and I look down, and my feeding tube was stuck. Well, that's no big deal. That happens often. With that syringe that you saw in an earlier picture, they give you a little plunger to go with that syringe, so that those kind of moments when something gets a little jammed up, you just go. Now, you want to do it gently, because it's like shooting liquid right into your stomach, right? So, you know, you want to power wash your gut, you can do that. But it's really not advised. So I was, you know, but I couldn't get it to go. Well, I'm still weak physically, so I stood up and I leaned against a hotel wall. Couldn't get it to go. My wife came back in the room. I said, "Honey, I need your help." She came over. She said, "No problem." She leaned over, and it didn't budge. And now I got concerned. I was in a roller desk chair. There's a sliding glass door behind me. I tell my wife, "Push as hard as you can." And I'm thinking, "Oh, boy, if this thing blows, it's going to blow me right out that sliding glass door." But my wife couldn't get it to work. We poured Pepsi in there. We did various things to try to get this. It was non-functioning. Here we are, half a continent away from our doctors. And my sole source of hydration, medication, nutrition is now non-functioning. Great. Packed up the room, stood by the car, prayed probably the weakest prayer we've ever prayed. Really? I'm just telling you, our faith, we're 18 months into the story, and our faith is just like tiny. Although something we learned in that journey, when your faith is down to the tiniest thread, there's somebody else around you who's still believing. This is why you need to stay in community. When you need people the most, you're going to be tempted to be with them the least. Do not give into that. Stay in your small group. Keep showing up at church. Keep answering your phone. When you need people the most, you're going to be tempted to withdraw from them. Resist that, because there's somebody still believing for you when your faith is down to a little thread. And then guess what? Your faith will be strong someday, and you'll be the one that they can lean on. It's legal to hang on to somebody else's faith. Well, our faith was pretty weak. We got into the car and started driving down the road. I just needed time to pray and think. I didn't know what doctor to go to anyway, so I just needed time to pray and think. My sister texted me before I was driving. My sister texted me and said, "What can we do?" Because I let the family know that I was in trouble. I was going to see that sister in just a couple days. She makes fabulous cheesecakes.
in my spirit. She asked, what can we do? In my spirit, the answer was, tell her to bake a cheesecake. That would have been cool if I would have obeyed. If I would have obeyed, I didn't. In my weak faith, I responded with the Christian answer, pray. Well, they did pray. I'm driving down the road. I have to fast forward the story for sake of time. But Joanna reached over and prayed for me as she had dozens of times before. Elders had prayed over us. We had been anointed with oil. All of council had prayed for us. But as she reached over and prayed for me on that day that my tube was stuck, I felt something move right here. A twinge, a snap, a spark. Something happened right there. Really? Could it be that on the day that my tube was stuck, God would heal me? I did something in that moment that the doctors are like, no, not liquids. You do not do liquids. Because if your esophagus doesn't open, it goes right in the lungs, and the doctors really don't like it when you suck orange juice into your lungs. But I took a little sip of orange juice, and that orange juice went all the way down, and a tiny little burp came all the way back up. Life was returning to the city. Yeah, you can... Next, I ate 4 ounces of Yoplait red raspberry yogurt. I was, first, I got one, I got ahead of myself. First, we stopped at a Casey's gas station in Grayville, Illinois. And, there we go. I learned that as you drive, it was safer to drive with a cup than a rag to spit in. So you want to be careful when you rode with this. Joanna's Diet Coke in one cup holder, my spit cup. Yeah, anyway, we held each other in that Casey's parking lot and declared, greater is he that is in me than the disease that attacks me. Greater is he that is in me than the one who opposes me. And we threw away that spit cup, never had to use it again. She's driving now. Now I'm eating Yoplait yogurt. I haven't eaten since the Bush administration, and I can now see plastic at the bottom of this yogurt cup. This is a photo op moment. We stopped at this rest stop, handed our camera to the first guy walking by. We were too excited to even tell him. He's still wondering why they take a picture of a couple with a cheesy smile and a Yoplait cup. But next up, Wendy's. Bought the biggest Frosty they'd sell me. Finish the night off with a bowl of chili. Go big or go home, right? And woke up the next morning without a single spit rag, spit towel, spit anything. I had slept through the night for the first time in a year and a half, swallowing my own saliva. And oddly enough, the thing I'm still most grateful to swallow, although cheesecake tastes really good, the thing I'm most grateful to swallow is my own spit. With that healing of the swallow, I began to regain weight immediately. And with that regained weight came more vitality. Word got back to Salem, Oregon. Remember that ear, nose, throat doctor that gave me the guided tour? Quote, who gave him permission to eat? You know how hard it is to get an appointment with two doctors at the same time, the swallow therapist of the moment and the ear, nose, throat doctor. They set up an appointment for me right after I got back to Salem. And they were ready to give me this huge lecture about you're going to kill yourself. And I had already gained 15 pounds. I had vitality. I bounced in their office, and I just watched them go. And the Christian of the two said, if there had been a medical miracle waiting for you on Mayo or the Harvard, we would have sent you there. But this is something that only God could have done, which I already knew, but thank you. In his wisdom and fascinating ways, I'm still not able to get off of that plasma stuff. Something still wants to affect my muscles. But in his fascinating ways, he's given me the strength to fully function, to now serve as your president of this denomination and have a very intense week where this is the first of about 25 times that I will be speaking between now and next Sunday night. because he gave me a promise that I'll give you everything you need to live today well. He didn't say a word about tomorrow. But he said, I'll give you everything you need to live today well. Friends, as I close, some of you are in 2009 right now, no doubt. You don't know where your story leads. You don't know what the master artist is up to. But can I stand before you and say, the designer has his hand on your life. The author, Jesus is called an author three times in the New Testament. The author is writing a good story in your life. But you know this. Some of the best stories have very dark chapters along the way. They're just not the last chapter. Unless they're a French story, then maybe so. You know what I'm saying, church? Your author, your designer, your master knows. He's not lost track of your storyline. But you need to stay in community. And you need to stay leaning into faith. My Jesus can do anything at any time for anybody. But he has his own timing in these storylines. As the worship team comes back and invites us to come just as we are to worship, I believe is the song. Come as you are. Come as you are is the song. I love the selection of this as the closing song because it's simply saying to us, you feel broken right now? You feel confused right now? You got questions right now? Come as you are. Just like Psalm 74. Why? How long? Where are you? Come just as you are.